Hi, this is Steve Rodriguez with ProgressivePulse.com, and I am very excited today to be talking to Corinne Drury of Swing Out Sister fame. Corinne, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine, thank you, on this rainy English day. I hope you've got better weather over there.
We do. In New York City, it's a little overcast, but hopefully when you make your way here, it'll be a little bit warmer.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Well, first of all, I have to say I'm such a big fan, and I can remember back in 1987 buying the actual record of your very first album, It's Better to Travel, and
You mean vinyl? We're talking vinyl here.
We're talking vinyl, yes. I think I had a best friend in high school, and we thought we were so cool that we thought we discovered like the brand new, you know, perfect band that nobody knew about, and we probably wore that record out completely. I don't even know if it still plays.
Oh, wow. Well, that's impressive. I don't think I even have a copy myself.
But to see, you know, now in 2009, you've come out with your ninth studio album, Beautiful Mess. First of all, congratulations on that. And
thank you.
You know, Beautiful Mess actually came out earlier, but we're finally getting it here in the States. How does all that work out with, like, the release dates and so forth?
There would be a staggered release, and it starts off in England, then Europe, then the States, then Asia, because it would allow you time to travel and go and do promotion. But then as everything got all global and computerized, we didn't really need to travel, and so we'd have a simultaneous release. Or you could be in 100 places at one time. But I think now, because everything's so online and digital and downloadable, there is a bit more emphasis on the live stuff. So people want to see performances because they're not buying records. Like you say, you bought our record on vinyl. You know, people don't have things, physical things, to have and hold and touch. So I think probably it's making the emphasis on live performance a lot more important. So it's good to try and stagger the release of stuff so you can actually go and promote it.
I just want to talk briefly about your history. I mean, going back to that vinyl record that I own, it was such a breakthrough with, of course, the single Breakout and a lot of the other songs, Twilight, that came out of that project. Talk to me a little bit about the history, because that was sort of like the Breakout CD. And then here in America, we did get a few other albums, but we didn't get your entire collection. And what a lot of people here in the States don't realize is that you've been moving steadily along and producing CDs throughout the years, correct?
We have, but I suppose what I was just saying, you can't be in 10 places at once, although now you can if you just do a blog or, you know, get online via your MySpace, Facebook, whatever. But I think we had huge success in America, and we spent a lot of time there doing promotion, making videos, doing TV and stuff. But then we did neglect a few other places, so we kind of divided our time a bit. But Beautiful Mess is our ninth studio album, so we have been, you know, quite busy. But it's the unusual thing about Beautiful Mess is that it's the first album we've produced ourselves. Well, it's mainly Andy, with a little bit of interference from me, but it's kind of, I don't know, it was a challenge, and I think it had come to the time in our careers to prove to ourselves that we actually could do this. You know, we've sat in enough studios for enough years, and we just thought, maybe we should just see if we can actually prove to ourselves that we could produce our own album. And believe you me, it's not as easy as it seems.
I wouldn't think it would be. You're talking about your partner that you've worked with since the beginning, Andy Connell, correct?
Yes.
How does the process work between the two of you?
Well, it was slightly different this time. How it usually works is and he will come up with some music and he'll give me a copy of it, and I'll go away and listen to it and take a few months, if we're lucky, a few years if we're not so lucky, to come up with a song. And, you know, I would kind of keep it in my head, maybe make a little recording on a handheld Walkman or something, but, you know, it's kind of hit and miss then when you get into the studio if you can recapture that same idea. And that's where having a very patient producer, which we had, and Paul Stavely O'Duffy, he would, you know, go through the song over and over till you found the right performance and the right, just the right way of interpreting this song that's never been sung before. But as Andy and I are very familiar with each other, we've known each other for many years, and, you know, we don't have to be quite as polite to each other as you have to when there's a third party there.
Right.
Kind of. It can be a little bit destructive sometimes when you're trying to finish a song. If you end up arguing and lose the whole mood, you can just blow it. So I learned to do logic. I learned how to use logic so I could record my vocals over the tracks that Andy had written and edit them and just work out exactly how I was going to perform it before going into the studio, because Andy hasn't got as much patience as Paul O'Duffy. I just thought, we are never going to get this record finished. So we do appreciate having a producer. And Paul, we've had a very close relationship with over the years and written several songs with him, as well as having him produce our records. But it's a different process, because then it does become a bit more of a performance. But I think the way Andy and I have worked on this record, it's kind of like musical conversations. It's a lot more intimate. It's a lot more close in a way, because it's just been between the two of us. And, you know, there was a point when I thought we would never get it finished, and Andy thought the same. We just had lots of bits of songs and bits of ideas and all, and different tracks here, there, and everywhere. We needed a good old tidy up, and that's when we came up with the title, Beautiful Mess, because it... We had these lovely little bursts of inspiration and ideas, but we had no idea how we were going to ever put them all together and get the album finished.
I get it. Tell me, because, you know, throughout the years, your music has been described as, you know, influenced from an earlier generation, Burt Bacharach, kind of Northern Soul, electric pop, jazz. But I'd love to know from you, like, how, if you could, describe your music, basically.
Well, that's a bit of a tricky one. Somebody once asked me that, and I just thought the best thing I could think of was pizzazz.
Because
it's somewhere between pop and jazz, but there's an awful lot more in there as well. But hopefully, whatever it is, it comes as a nice little burst of inspiration that's not quite what you'd expect.
You know, what's a style of music right now that you're kind of influenced by that we might find a little bit on Beautiful Mess?
Oh, it's difficult to say, really. I think we tend to absorb stuff that's going on around us, but we also draw a lot on stuff that's inspired us from the very beginning. It's almost like that's your spiritual guide, you know, maybe Stevie Wonder or Dionne Warwick or, you know, the Funk Brothers, or it may be The Roots, or, you know, someone you've heard. I had this great band, The Rebirth, at this music event, Southport Weekender, a couple of years ago, and it's like, wow, they're kind of putting stuff together the way we like to do, and it's coming out in a whole different way. But, you know, just something will just hit you where it matters, and just, you know, open up your ears to a whole new thing.
I think that's definitely apparent. I mean, you know, so many bands kind of fall into trends that are of the moment, but it sounds like, you know, you really draw from many different things, and it's what's kept you kind of alive and well here in 2009.
Well, I'm glad you recognize that. I mean, I think the main thing is you have to be yourself. And if you've liked something 20 years ago, then you should still like it now. But there's some new stuff that can come along that you can like just as much, but just don't forget your old friends.
Exactly. Well, Japan has definitely just opened their arms out to you and just embraced you. I know you've had some albums that have only been released in Japan. What's it like to perform in Japan, and why do you think they've sort of embraced you so much?
Well, I don't know. I think the Japanese are very loyal people. They're very courteous. They're very loyal. And I think they're genuinely interested in where you're going to go next. You know, they like to see things through. But performing there, it was strange when we first went there because they are very polite people, the Japanese. We would go on stage and perform, and they wouldn't clap until the very last pin drop of a note in every song. And, you know, they're very restrained, and we're thinking, oh, maybe they don't really like it. But I think they just be very attentive, and, you know, they want to hear. They won't cheer and shout and crowd you out. They are actually listening. And, you know, if you get people clapping, go, hey, if you want to sing and dance and join in and clap along with this one, they won't stop till you say stop.
Well, that's great. That's
So
great.
it's a rude awakening when we come to America, and you might have a little solo that goes on a bit too long. We go, take your time. Or you might be talking a little bit too much. You go, get on with it. You
Exactly.
know, people kind of want to participate in America. They want to be part of it, and they will voice their opinions and let you hear, good or bad, what they're thinking. But I think in Japan, people are very much cautious to not interrupt.
Exactly, a little more interactive here in the States, actually.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. And we're looking forward to these dates over here, although I hope our audiences aren't going to be too rowdy because we've got a kind of slightly more intimate sound this time. We've got a different lineup. We've got a six-piece band. It's a more acoustic, jazzy sound. We have double bass. We have percussion. It's semi-acoustic, so I think it's a gentler treatment of some of our songs. There's some old favorites, some new ones, and some songs we've never performed live before. So we've got all sorts.
Nice. Sounds like a nice intimate tour. And to talk about that tour here in the States, let's just talk about that real quick. You're going to be in my hometown in San Francisco on June 3rd.
Oh, are you going to come?
Actually, my sister is going to that show. I live in New York now, so I'm going to see your New York
Oh,
show.
you're going to be coming to one of the shows, and because what I'm very interested to find out about in Bimbos, we have played there a couple of times before, but it took meeting somebody from San Francisco in London to tell me this. There is a crystal ball on the bar in Bimbos. Do you know about the mermaid?
I do. I love that bar. Yes.
We've got a mermaid when we play. I mean, I hope it's not going to put too many people off watching our show, but I was fascinated by this. And the girl I met here in London, she actually used to be a mermaid.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. It's a
Yeah.
great venue of Bimbos.
It's fantastic. I mean, when we first played that, we go, what are you doing putting it in a place with a name like that? I just thought it sounded like it was a pole dancing club or a lap dancing club or something. I wasn't too sure what to expect with a name like Bimbos, but actually, it's kind of a bit Italian, isn't it? And I think that's a name for a small child. That name has probably been taken and, you know,
Reconstrued a
interpreted
bit.
in different ways. Yeah.
Exactly. We talked briefly about it, the music industry changing. You can download now. You have much more availability with MySpace, Facebook, and so forth. How do you like the current state of the music industry that it's in?
Well, it's a time of change, and I think it's easy to dig your heels in and say you don't like anything and complain, or you just have to go with it because there's not really much you can do to stop it. And, you know, there are certain points. When we first started making music, there was a changeover from vinyl to CDs, and everyone was up in arms about that. Oh, it's digital. Oh, it doesn't sound the same, and you haven't got your beautiful 12-inch packaging, and people still got used to it. You know, it'll take a while for things to settle. Everything has to be redistributed, and people have to just get used to a different way of doing things. But I think it actually has changed the way people listen to music. If I put a load of tunes into my iPod and shuffle, it's like, oh, here's songs that I have had for years or have known for years, or songs from albums that I've completely overlooked, and hear them in a completely different way because I don't know who's performing it, I don't know where it's come from. You can listen to stuff in a totally unbiased way on an iPod, and you know, it's kind of a bit weird not having something to have and to hold, but you know, I can remember going on trips to America and taking a few precious CDs to listen to, thinking, oh, I have to leave this one behind or leave that. I can take my whole collection in an iPod now.
Exactly, exactly.
And hopefully not leave my iPod on the plane like I did last time. Somebody's got a good collection of music, whoever found that one.
Wow, I would hate that. Oh my gosh. Hopefully you had it backed up.
I did, okay. But you know, it's kind of, I'll learn.
Exactly.
Keep it in my pocket this time.
And because we love your music so much, I would love to know, you know, who, maybe a couple people, who are you listening to these days? Who's kind of like inspiring you that you've got on your playlist?
Oh, different things come along. A little while back, I was listening to a band called The Rebirth. I think they're based in San Francisco, but they've just got cool sounds. They've got their own label. I think I'm interested in people who put things together in an unusual way. You know, it's when you just take different influences and mix them up. It's where the exciting things start happening.
Exactly. Will we see any more music videos from you? Because, first of all, you have such an amazing style.
Well, we have made some videos, kind of, you know, home movies, really. I think the kind of record company big budget videos are long gone for us, but in a way it's interesting because you have to use your own resources, you have to use your initiative and just come up with some good ideas. I mean, it's quite a healthy time for that. I collaborated with a photographer called Rebecca Miller, who is the one who told me about the mermaids actually at Bimbo's, and we've done a kind of silent movie for one of the songs from our album, Butterfly Lullaby, and that's my favorite video so far. It was just a succession of stills, and we've kind of just done stop frame photography and made a kind of silent movie. That's Butterfly Lullaby. If you look for it on YouTube, some people have made their own little videos and put them up, but the original Butterfly Lullaby is like a silent movie.
Okay, I will definitely look for that one.
And another one we made, it was just like a bit of a travel documentary about Manchester, because that's where Andy comes from. It's where a lot of our songs are written. And we were just driving around making a little movie about the Manchester ever-changing skyline. There's kind of old mill buildings and buildings from the Industrial Revolution, and now this whole revolution of new flats and skyscrapers, and you know, just a look at Manchester past and present, really. And that was for the song Butterfly. And my friend's daughter Marley is featured on Hula Hoop.
Oh, nice. Well, excellent. Well, Corinne, I want to thank you so much. Beautiful Mess is out now here in the States. You can get it on iTunes, correct?
Yep, you can.
Great. And for those of you here in the States, you kick off your U.S. tour June 3rd in San Francisco at Bimbo's. But you're also making stops to Los Angeles, Maryland. I think you added Philadelphia, if I'm correct.
Yeah, the World Cafe Live in Philadelphia. And then we finish at B.B. King's in New York.
Which is where I will catch you, and I can't wait to see that show. And B.B. King's is such a great venue, so...
Oh, that's good, because I haven't been there before, so we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to having a great time in New York, and it's the last night of our little tour, so we'll probably have a bit of a party afterwards.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Well, Corinne, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I can't wait to see you on your tour.
Hey, thank you, and come and say hello, and we will dance and have fun.
I would love that. I would love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.